Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of 3GT, where three guys get together and chum it up and talk about all the issues of life and things that are important to them, even if they're not important to our listeners, though we do try to make them important to our listeners. We are glad that you are with us, and I have sworn that I am going to do this without having to start over, and so that is exactly what I'm doing. We are...
You mean like some of your other co-hosts?
I wasn't going to name any names.
It's true. Some of our introductions, and thankfully they're edited, so people don't hear, some of our introductions are spectacular failures. So.
Yes. Mine usually being that way. But enough lamenting on my part about the failures of myself and others on this podcast. I like taking the opportunity to be able to pick the brain of a pastor and a president, a professor, but who was also a pastor at different times. You know, many of us in the church have come across seeing pastors get tired, get worn out. And, you know, even in our own congregation, we are dealing with and really trying to come alongside just pastors that need refreshed and need helped. And so I thought it would be a good idea. We thought it would be a good idea today to just talk about this topic of pastoral refreshment, what it looks like to for the congregation, for the ruling elders, for others to come alongside and to help refresh the pastor in their ministry. Well, and one of the ways I want to start this topic off, or you know, this idea is to discuss kind of the difference it is to being a pastor as opposed to just a general laborer or a, you know, an attorney. That's something I know, or a doctor. There are certain stresses, I think, that are associated with being a pastor that other professions don't have. And so I guess I wanted to ask both of you if you have worked in other professions or done other things, in what ways is being a pastor perhaps different than just a regular 9-to-5 type of job?
Well, we do see in the scriptures that the Apostle James warned the church that not many should become teachers. And I think that's in reference to the pastoral office, because we will incur a stricter judgment. Just the ministry of preaching the word is a great burden, that you're given the responsibility to bring the whole counsel of God to God's people. The Apostle Paul described this work as, if done faithfully, you don't have the blood of others on your head, which would infer that if you don't do it faithfully, you do. So you do have this tremendous responsibility to feed the sheep of God. And I think that is one clear place where pastoral ministry is distinguished from other types of work. So that would be the first place I would point.
I think in answering that question, the first thing that I would do is to recognize that in the culture in which we live, I think most people are very overworked. Most people are exhausted. Most people are stressed. I've grown to really appreciate that as a pastor, interacting in the lives of my congregation. Whether it's a manual laborer, whether it's a teacher, there are all kinds of stresses that accompany our ever-increasingly, it seems, busy schedules. Even though we live in a world that has become more convenient in many ways, we are, to quote the Kevin DeYoung the Young book, we are crazy busy. And so I want to be careful because sometimes, and I say this as a pastor being critical of the way this is sometimes spoken of, sometimes the way it's spoken of, it's as if pastors really just got the short end of the stick. And, oh, you know, woe is us. We have the hardest job in the world. Nobody knows what it is to be overworked like we do. Nobody knows what it is to be exhausted like we do. And I want to be very cautious to say, well, there are unique burdens, anxieties, exhaustion to the pastoral ministry, but we need to recognize that that exhaustion is not particular to the pastoral ministry. And so I just want to be very clear. I know that the theme for today is not just exhaustion in general, but for the pastoral ministry. But I want every comment that I make to be read in that light, that I recognize a lot of people are very worn out. But specifically with the pastoral ministry, with what Barry was saying, right, you can't labor as a pastor without those warnings in Scripture. And they're very real warnings. And we know that one of the things that saving faith does is it trembles at the warnings. And there are warnings that are particular to pastors and to elders as well, who are given to the ministry of the word. And that is a unique aspect of it. That's a burden. With that are other spiritual burdens. The Apostle Paul, when he gives his whole, what's sometimes called his resume of suffering, I think it's in 2 Corinthians 11, Paul says, you know, I know what it is to be beaten. I know what it is to be stoned, to be shipwrecked, to go about hungry, to go about destitute, to have nowhere to lay my head. And then he adds somewhere in there, you can look it up, 2 Corinthians something or another. Paul says, on top of all of that, I have the daily burden of the churches that are weighing me down. And I think that's a very real form of pastoral suffering. I think pastors sense the spiritual burden of the church in a way that is not necessarily shared or understood by others in the church. You know, my every waking moment is... Well, that might be a bit of an exaggeration, but I never get away from thinking about the matters of the church. And there are spiritual burdens there that as a pastor, you shoulder and you shoulder the brunt of them. With that, I also think just some things somewhat unique to the pastoral ministry and other professions as well. But I often tell people I'm an extroverted person by all the personality tests that I despise, but I take once in a while. I'm an extroverted person, but a pastor is called upon in some ways to be a professional extrovert. You know, you're really looked at in social settings and in fellowship times to be the one who initiates the conversations, to keep conversations. That can be exhausting in and of itself. As a pastor, one of the things that I often try to convey to my wife, I always live under a perpetual deadline. You just think sermons. I have two Lord's Day sermons that I need to preach, and they need to be ready by the time I get to the pulpit. And Monday morning when I wake up, the cycle starts all over again. There's always this pressure of deadlines, deadlines, deadlines. We don't get to say, well, you know, Saturday night rolled around and, you know, I'm going to ask my congregation, you guys, you know, you mind if I just don't preach on Sunday morning? Because I didn't get it done. You know, there's no leeway there. You've got to get to the pulpit. If you don't preach, who's going to preach? And so as a pastor, that affects me as well, is I feel like I'm always under the gun. I'm always under a deadline.
Sure. And, you know, I kind of feel some of your pain, guys, as an attorney. I live under a deadline, but I have this beautiful thing called a motion to continue, which on rare occasions I can file. And that's where I ask the court, hey, can I move this date out just a little bit? Can you give me another week to respond to this? And they're usually very generous to do that. But so you're right. And I'm hearing that there is this similarity in some respects to, I guess, I don't want to say a normal job versus an abnormal job, but, you know, to that, like I go to where I'm constantly under the gun, constantly under pressure. You know, I actually wake up in the middle of the night because I dreamt about my job. So I do kind of appreciate this idea that you have this weight on you. I also know the burdens of, you know, looking in the back of a courtroom and seeing, and this is an absolute true statement, seeing a mom with a six-year-old daughter who's relying upon me at this convict less. I mean, there is a lot of pressure involved in that, and the release that comes after a guilty verdict as was the case, or the stress of not getting a guilty verdict. So I do appreciate kind of the weight that you bear. And I don't have is this idea of judgment the idea that somebody's blood will be on my head if I don't do my job right. Does that judgment, do you carry that with you at all times? Is that something that's always kind of in the back of your mind? And either one of you can answer that.
I know for myself, I felt that when you're preparing messages and you're thinking about the souls before you. Again, in the Lord, as you carry it in the Lord and you're seeking the Lord, he strengthens you, and that burden you can actually carry it with a great deal of joy and confidence in him, because you know you're really seeking to be faithful to the scriptures. So it's not something I live like in this dread that the thunderbolt's going to hit me, lightning bolt's going to hit me from the sky if I slip up a word or something like that. It's just something before you that makes you realize how what a weight of responsibility has been placed on feeding the people of God in a faithful way.
Yeah, there. I like the way you said that, Barry. Though it's a weightiness, that doesn't mean it's bereft of joy. I just preached this last Lord's Day on 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, where especially Paul emphasizes there, what is our hope or our joy or our crown of boasting before our Lord Jesus at his coming? Is it not you? For you are our glory and joy. And I think Paul's capturing something of that, where he understands, right, here he's giving forth a picture of pastoral ministry, and he's saying, you know, my desire is that you will all make it to heaven with me. That's what I aim at, to get you all home safely. And that's a huge burden, and there's all kinds of weightiness to that. And Paul has described that earlier in that chapter, the way in which he went about that. But it's a joy, and it's our glory, and it's our hope, and it's our crown of boasting. And so, yes, it is a weight that you carry around often with you. And yet at the same time, that doesn't mean it's a joyless weight, as if it's just all drudgery and sour and dour all the time.
Fair enough. I could appreciate that. You know, I have had occasion to speak publicly, I know what it's like to have to get in front of 200 people and captivate them and hold their attention and try to pass a message on. I don't know if you're aware of this, our denomination's blue book says in a pinch, a ruling elder can preach. It's on rare occasions. And so not too long ago, I actually had that opportunity.
Whoa.
I don't know if you knew that or not. So I did attempt as best I could to preach. And I did feel a little bit of that weightiness. You know,
is this recorded?
No, it might be.
What?
It might be. I don't know.
We're going to have to find it, Kyle.
Good, you know, Godspeed in that endeavor.
While Scott is talking, let me utilize my amazing Google skills.
You will not find it on Sermon Audio. I promise you that.
No.
But what I can confirm is that, you know, I speak in front of strangers all the time. When I pick a jury, you know, I'm in front of 50 or 60 strangers talking. But there was something different about standing in the pulpit and delivering the word of God. That was something completely different. And it was, I guess, awesome in the term that it was an experience completely different. And it can wear you out, you know, having that on you. I could see how week after week having that on you can really wear you out. What are some ways, I guess, why I'm saying that is, how do you, at the end of the Lord's Day, how do you find rest? Because the Lord's Day isn't exactly restful, or as the world would view it, for a pastor. So what are some of the things that you do at the end of a Lord's Day to just wind down and really be refreshed yourselves?
I binge eat I go home and I find as many things that are edible that aren't healthy, and I just dump my
comfort food. Well, it is important to go home and enjoy your family. One of the things that Kyle brought up a little bit earlier was he was talking about the pastoral office pushes you to be an extrovert. And for some of us, that comes naturally. I view myself that way primarily. I enjoy being around people. So when I'm preaching, and even though, yeah, there's energy and I can get weary, usually I'm pretty excited just to be worshiping with God's people and fellowshipping with them afterwards. So to me, the Lord's Day, even though it is our work, it's still a day of refreshment. So it's not like you just can't wait for it to be over kind of a thing. I just don't want to give that type of impression.
Well, and I didn't mean it to be like that. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, there is kind of a, you have a lot more to do on the Lord's Day than the average churchgoer.
Yes. Yeah, but I enjoy just reflecting on conversations that my wife and I have had through the course of the day and catching up. Sometimes you don't get as much time with your family. So for me, catching up with my children, that type of thing is enjoyable. So yeah, just relaxing and enjoying my family is the primary way I see myself doing that.
I usually, Lord's Day is for me, not that anybody asked what my personal schedule was, but I'm up by 5 a.m. on every Lord's Day to get ready for church. Then we have Sunday school, then we have morning worship. And then Rachel and I usually have people over between morning and evening worship, and they are usually over the entire time. And I will escape at about 4:30 to look over my sermon for the evening. We go and do evening worship, and then we actually usually have people back over our house until about 11 o'clock at night. And then I finally get to go put my head on my pillow after I've stuffed my face. Let it be known that despite having people over, I still eat a lot of food. So but that is, in a sense, it's not refreshing in the sense that physically I'm being rejuvenated. But spiritually, I find that to be a very good use of the Lord's Day. And as exhausted as I am when I put my head on my pillow, I never really regret it. I look back and I say, you know, that was a good day. It was a good day of worship. It was a good day of fellowship. So
good. So at the end of the day, you're not just grouchy and tired and ready to just go sit in your study and be alone. I mean, you're actually refreshed and rejuvenated by the Lord's Day as well as pastors.
Yeah, slightly depressed because I always want to crawl into a hole and die after I preach. But besides that, it's usually pretty refreshing.
No, but I know you kind of are joking when you say that, but is there, maybe not, maybe you aren't joking. You sounded like you had a little bit of laughter in your voice, Kyle, but is there this temptation for you to go back and just be hypercritical of the sermon, of how worship was? Do you go back and look at those things and think about those things?
Absolutely. I do. Yeah.
I mean, I might reflect a little bit on conversations I've had with people, but it seems like there's always something else to start thinking about. So it's one of my pastoral mentors used to say, every day's Sunday. In other words, you get up on Monday morning and you're starting to think about the next go around. And I tend to, although when I preach, I still tend to work on Mondays. I do try to find more time for reading and reflecting and praying, and that helps me to get my soul filled back up again after expending the energies ministering on the Lord's Day.
And I know this seems really odd that I'm just here peppering questions at you guys being pastors and why and how you think and what you do, but really the point is that there does come a time when somebody's soul can get, burnt out, or there's not as much joy in doing what you used to do, or, man, I'm just tired and I'm exhausted. And does that happen to you guys? Have you seen that, or do you know of other pastors that have been through that?
Yes.
Kyle's super pastor, so he hasn't ever experienced that, but us mere mortals do.
That's not true at all. It is, you know, feeling the exhaustion of all of that add up, even in 6 years of ministry. I've felt it. And I know pastors for whom the exhaustion has been ministry ending. So, yeah.
So it is a real concern that for us to have, right?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. There are periods in my ministry where I was getting tired, weary. A lot of times it would accompany when there were difficult cases going on in the congregation, conflict, that type of thing. It would be particularly wearisome. And so, yeah, you at those times, trying to find ways to get refreshment were important to me. Often that would come through spending some extra time with mentors in the faith and letting them talk me through things and pray with them. Or, you know, a lot of pastors, and I was guilty of this, especially earlier on in my ministry, I didn't take my vacations like I should have. And I think some pastors forget that the ministry is not a sprint, but it's a marathon. And they need to make sure that they're, in a sense, pacing themselves. It doesn't mean we don't work hard and have full days and that type of thing. But I find that it's really important for guys to get away, whether it's actually taking a vacation somewhere else or going and doing some other type of ministry elsewhere, so that you're not just getting so locked into your own realm of ministry and your local congregation that you get exhausted by the same problems, the same people, the same issues all the time.
Yeah. So how often would you guys, or do you guys go and just sit under the preaching of another man? I mean, and is that something that is refreshing to you?
It approached with the right prayerful attitude is refreshing. Can I qualify that?
You know, yeah, absolutely.
As a pastor, it really can be a challenge at times to hear other preachers. Because at least for me, I have a critical spirit already that I keep praying is sanctified, and you immediately find yourself, well, how would I have preached that? And inevitably, I would have preached it better than any of these other people. No, but right, there is a certain critical attitude, but there is a blessing in that. So like when we go on family vacation, I get to sit under other people's preaching, and then we have a joint service once a year here in Northeast Kansas, and I don't really volunteer to preach at that. So about five times a year, I get to sit under somebody else's preaching.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that could be a benefit to a pastor to just go and be ministered to in that way, or if that would, as you described, Kyle, cause the critical mindset to creep in. Just curious. I'm trying to learn here.
I do think to emphasize something Barry has said, if I can I do that?
Certainly.
Sure.
As long as it's something
it is something you said. I think vacation is an extremely important thing to think through when you're working with your pastor. I'm extremely blessed. My congregation here gives me 4 weeks of vacation every year. And because of the nature of my work and ministry, my wife and I try to guard those vacations very carefully. It takes some understanding, especially from family, to know that we're not going to use a lot of our vacation to go visit family, because that just exhausts me and it doesn't give me time to rejuvenate. And it doesn't give me time to really spend quality time with my children. You know, if they're running around with cousins and grandma and grandpa and aunts and uncles. And so one thing that at least Rachel and I do, we really prioritize our vacations. And our vacations are usually structured around just our immediate family, where we can get away and disconnect, where there's no expectations on us. And for me, one of the big things is where there's no deadlines. So my wife is gracious enough to accommodate me. When we go on family vacation, I don't want a schedule because I'm not a scheduled person, but as a pastor, you have to live your life by a schedule. And you're always on call as a pastor. You never know when you're going to get called because somebody's in the hospital or somebody fell and they need help, or somebody just shows up at your door, you know, needing to talk. And so for me personally, the most refreshing times for me are our family vacations. And I really, really value those. And I'm really thankful to be in a congregation that sees that as a very important priority in helping me get some rest and refreshment.
Scott, one thing I wanted to touch on here when you were talking about putting yourself under someone else's preaching, I think one of the things that we really need to be thinking about as the church is, as you look at the New Testament, it seems rare where you find that there's just one man by himself in a local ministry. You see when they're out church planting and when Paul's writing, there's always mention of other names, other men around those congregations. And I like the growing trend in our own denomination as well as some of our other sister denominations where there are associate pastors or other men involved in the ministry. I always found that when we had interns or associate pastor, just having someone to share the ministry with in a special way was helpful. Often when that's the case, then you are, if you're preaching the morning and the other guy's preaching the evening or whatever, it allows you to have more freedom when you do take a vacation. Sometimes it's hard to find preaching and know you have a guy who'll cover for you so you can later cover for him. So there's, and it's just the two are better than one principle that you can carry so much of the burden of the ministry in a different way when there's another guy. And again, ruling elders, we need them. We have to have them. And the more equipped a ruling elder is to help in any of these things, like for instance, you've mentioned you've preached once. That's just tremendous. That's great. But we also, I think, need to think about in this particular ministry, is there a place for another man in one way or another, whether it's full-time, part-time, to be involved with our pastor?
Yeah. And Barry, one of the things I wanted to ask you, you kind of have your finger on the pulse of you know, the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America, being the president of its seminary. And you know kind of what's going on with the pastors in the seminary and the students. Are you seeing... is this idea of pastors not being refreshed properly, is that coming up? Is that a fairly regular occurrence, or is that something that's rarely happens?
Well, it does seem like currently that we are seeing a lot of men, and the reasons for it are myriad. It's not just one reason, but we are seeing a lot of men struggling, needing to take long leaves of absence, questioning call, those types of things that are going on. And as Kyle said earlier, I think part of it is just a general cultural trend that all of God's people are busy. There's many struggling with depression, those types of things. I think has a lot to do with our modern lifestyle and the way people live and those types of issues as well. But then within the pastoral ministry, again, because of some of these additional spiritual burdens that we've discussed, I think it impacts pastors in a unique way. And so, yeah, we are seeing this, and it is a concern.
Yeah. And so as part of your seeing this, do you feel like it's the seminary's responsibility in training the students, or I guess an ongoing responsibility to the students that have graduated, to the pastors that you've sent out, to help with this problem, with this issue, how to keep pastors refreshed?
Well, two responses come to mind. First and foremost, if there is a concern regarding a pastor, it has to start with the local church. It has to start with the elders and the congregation. We sometimes don't think about the fact that not only is our pastor a shepherd, but he's also a sheep. Not only is he to be ministering to others, but he needs at times to be ministered to. And so it's really the first line in this whole question is the session and the congregation. And then the presbytery who's ordained or installed that man into that local congregation, the presbyteries who oversee their congregation should be really monitoring the health and well-being of their pastors. We've received news here the last week or two of a sister denomination who's unfortunately had the suicide of one of their ministers, and it just makes you pause and reflect about how low a place a man must be to get to the point where he would end up taking his own life and leaving his family and congregation behind. And it's just something you don't want any man feeling that lonely and that desperate that would be the step that they would take. So we do need to be monitoring it. So that would be my first response. It needs to be dealt with in the local area first and foremost. But as a seminary, we spend most of our time thinking about bringing students into the seminary who will eventually get sent out into the pastorate. So we're on the front end of it all. And we don't often think enough, I don't think, about ongoing education and ways that we can be encouraging the local pastor. So we've actually, as you're aware of, I know this was sort of a leading question.
Yeah. It was a very leading question.
But we have just announced a pastoral refreshment program where we're inviting pastors and hopefully their wives to come and take a class on vital churches, which really focuses on the man's leadership in a congregation and ways to keep himself spiritually encouraged and refreshed, to come and take that class. And then we're going to follow it up with reading groups where we're going to put pastors together reading material that we think would be helpful to their spiritual nourishment, refreshment, and then get into online discussion groups with one another. And also our faculty, they feel burdened by this. I know some of our faculty are already counseling with and talking to men who are discouraged. And so we're going to hook them up with faculty members who can just keep them regularly prayed for, in contact with, just as a way of not trying to replace what local churches and presbyteries need to be doing, but just to come alongside and offer a source of help.
That sounds like it'll be very helpful to many ministers. Kyle, do you have any? We're at about 30 minutes now, and I don't want to go much longer. I don't think, Kyle, and don't take this the wrong way, I don't think we've gone this long without you talking since I've been on the show.
I'm just relaxing and being refreshed.
Well, there you go. Well, I appreciate that, and I apologize. You know, sometimes I take digs at you, Kyle, and it's just not warranted.
It's not warranted. That is correct.
No, that's why. Bad. That's why we choose the parishioners that we do, is so that they can take digs at Kyle. That's part of what you signed up for.
When I signed the contract to do this, it said I had to make sure I gave Kyle a hard time.
That's no. Right.
Well, I guess we can end on that note. We thank you for joining us. We would encourage you to pray for your pastors. I know we've talked about rolling elders and other things, but pray for your pastors and be there for their support. Pray for us as well, and we love your support. We love to hear from you, to get feedback from you here on 3GT. So we would invite you to do that. We hope you have been encouraged by today's conversation, and we hope to talk to you again sometime soon.